All right, Hall of Famer for today is the Rambam. Okay, anyone know? Years?
1250.
Okay. Very close. Rambam was born Erev Pesach, 1135, in Cordova. Okay? His accomplishments are astounding. Until today, he's considered one of the greatest and most, you know, probably one of the best known Jews of the last 1,000 years. He is a descendant of both Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and David HaMelech. He would sign his letters Moshe ben Maimon, never Rav Moshe ben Maimon, but we refer to him as Rambam, and he's known universally by the Latin name Maimonides. In the 1120s, you have a movement called the Almohads. Anyone ever hear of this? Okay, the Almohads, what that name means, believers in the oneness of God, in contradistinction to the Christians. Okay, this is fine. You have people that are monotheists. By the 1140s, they start to become violent. Beforehand, they tolerated non-Muslims. They were called dinis, second-class citizens. That was okay. But now they were being expelled and killed. This is basically the counter-crusades. If the Christians could run through Europe and try to make everyone Christian, so now the Almohads, they wanted to do the same thing and make everyone Muslim. Not really unlike what's going on today. Okay, this were the Almohads. What was once the beautiful intellectual society of Spain, we spoke about last week when we talked about Rashi, that Christian Europe was different, you know, than Muslim Europe, where they appreciated intelligence and all these Jews rose to great ranks in the Muslim society. This comes to a bitter end. And there's a new type of Muslim that was taking over, one that was ignorant and one that was destructive. As a child, the Rambam's primary teacher was his father, Maimon. But he also refers to his father's Rebbe, the Rimi Gash, who he only met once, as his Rebbe as well. Rimi Gash died when the Rambam was 6. So he had one meeting at a young age, but he refers to him as his Rebbe. Now the Rimi Gash's Rebbe was the Rif. And the Rif learned from Rabbeinu Chanana. So this is like the line of Sephardi, you know, Gedolim. By 1148, the family of the Rambam are forced to flee Cordova. So it's really interesting, even though the Rambam basically only lived in Cordova till his bar mitzvah, there's still a tourist site if you go there, you know, the house the Rambam lived in. Whether or not it is the house the Rambam lived in, I have no idea, but it is a tourist site. You know, till his bar mitzvah, this is where he lived. They wandered around southern Spain, including Toledo, until finally ending up in North Africa and Morocco. 10 years later, they make their way, they're in Fez. This is where the Rambam is now at the age of 23. While still a teenager, right, your age, he wrote a book on the Jewish calendar using advanced astronomy and a book on logic, saying that logic is to intellect as grammar is to language. And what's interesting is scholars have shown that the Rambam is absolutely consistent. What he wrote as a teenager is what you saw many decades later in his Mor Nevuchim. His line of thinking didn't change. This is the way he saw things then, and he continued. Realizing that Jews were constantly on the move, he felt sitting in yeshiva and learning b'menuchas ha-nefesh to understand the Gemara was going to be very difficult. And therefore, the Rambam took upon himself to write a perush on the Gemara. Rambam wrote a perush on the Gemara. Not like Rashi, that's sort of word for word, but he summarized sugyas, paraphrased sugyas, and he wrote on all of Nashim, all of Nezikim, all of Moed. He also wrote a perush on Yerushalmi. None of these survived. Okay, the only reason we know that he wrote is because he refers to it in his later writings. He said, as I explained in my parish on, you know, Masechet this, and like, you know, he wrote on Bavli, on Yerushalmi, we just don't have it. Maybe one day we'll find it, I don't know. In Fez, the Rambam and his family, they lived incognito. And it was during this time he learned medicine. If he was enrolled in medical school or was self-taught is unclear. 1163, the Rambam is only 28 years old. He composes a famous letter, Igeret Kiddush Hashem, also known as Igeret Hashmad. He wrote it in response to a rabbi not living in Morocco. Rambam was a little upset because this rabbi was not familiar with the situation, and he paskened that the Jews in Morocco had to give up their lives rather than declare their belief in Islam. There were some rabbis that even said Jews should voluntarily go to the authorities and say, in case you don't know, I am Jewish and I don't believe in Muhammad as a prophet, and be killed. And the Rambam was not happy with this. In the letter, he writes that if someone is killed al kiddush Hashem, he doesn't want to declare that Muhammad is prophet of God, so that's fine. He died al kiddush Hashem, he's a holy person. But he comes to ask first, I would tell him, declare that Muhammad's a prophet. Don't be killed. Okay? His reasoning is, A, it's being forced upon you. It's forced apostasy. Two, Islam's not avodah zarah. Three, there's no action required. With the Christians, they made you go get baptized. Here's just a declaration, just words. Say Muhammad's a prophet. And four, they didn't even check how you lived your private life. It's not like the Muranos that had to keep to the Pesach Seder in the basements and no one would find them. You make your declaration, Muhammad's a prophet, and you go back to, you know, having your Seder and having your minyan and shul. So he didn't think that it was a big deal. Because at the end, onus rachmana patri, it's under duress, Kadosh Baruch Hu is forgiving, and you don't have to lose your life for this. Okay, probably couldn't make a minyan shul, because that would be public, but privately, in your house, you have your Seder, no one's coming in to check on you. Although, he says, better if you can, better to leave the country than have a fake conversion. Now, this letter eventually caused the Rambam's own identity to become known, and he was almost killed. The only reason Rambam made it is because a medical professor, possibly a colleague of his, swore in court that the Rambam was a great doctor, a great philosopher, and a loyal Muslim, and he was saved. But the Rambam realized that it was time for him to leave. He makes his way, 1165, leaves Morocco, and makes his way to Eretz Yisrael. He arrives in Eretz Yisrael on the 3rd of Sivan, lands in Akko, and he makes the day a chag. You guys are in Israel. It's like, oh yeah, I'm in Israel, so what? He arrived in Israel with his family, and it became a holiday that was celebrated by his family for generations. Generations, the day that the Rambam made his way to Eretz Yisrael, celebrated as a chag. Later that year, on the 6th of Cheshvan, he visits Yerushalayim. He goes up on Har HaBayit, and on the 9th, he visits the Marat HaMachpelah, and these days as well become chagim for the Rambam and his families. But like Avram Avinu, he has to make his way to Egypt because of financial considerations. Couldn't make it in Eretz Yisrael. Some say that also the Crusaders were coming through and looking for Jewish leaders and killing them. This is another reason why he left. And he makes his way to Egypt. Although the Rambam remains in Egypt for the last 37 years of his life, he was never very comfortable with it. He would sign all his letters, Ani Moshe Asfaradi, Ha'over Kol Yom Gimel Lavim. I am Moshe the Sfaradi, who's violating three mitzvot every day. Because there's three different psukim that talk about not going back to Egypt. It was here that he finished, in 1168, his first major work, his parish on Mishnayos. Now this had been gone 10 years earlier, during his wandering from place to place. Now it's interesting, the Rambam published so many works. He wrote letters. He wrote Sheilot and Tshuvot. He wrote medical writings. And then you have his famous major trilogy, Perish HaMishnayot, the Mishnah Torah, and Moreh Nevuchim. Any one of these things would have made the Rambam famous. All of them, so varied, makes the Rambam a legend. Perish HaMishnayos was written in Arabic, so that the layman who didn't have time to go through five daf of Gemara to understand what the halacha was from the Mishnah, he had it there. You read the Mishnah, and then afterwards, Rambam will explain the Mishnah and tell you, how do we paskin? Most often, it's one of the opinions of the Mishnah. And if it's not, he'll tell you, it's another opinion of the Gemara, and we end up paskin like another opinion, not like any of the opinions of the Gemara. So that everyone should know what to do. In his commentary, what we have, which is phenomenal, we have overviews. We have introductions, utilizing scientific knowledge. So for example, the Rambam will utilize his knowledge of astronomy and geometry and medicine to explain things that are going on. His introductions made even the most difficult areas manageable and understandable, like Taurus. Seder Taurus is very, very difficult. He has these overviews and introductions that first give you the basics and the principles, and now you can understand what's going on in the Mishnayos. We see the influence of his travels. He quotes Minhagim that he saw in Spain, Chachmei Morocco, Eretz Yisrael. He even tells us that a lot of the stuff he wrote was while he was traveling at sea. Some of his introductions have become classics. The Rambam wrote Hakdama to Mishnah. Okay, it's essential reading. Anyone here learn the Rambam's Hakdama to Mishnah? I'll get to that in a second. Though the Mishnah, he traces Torah Shabbat Tam and Torah Shabbat, the whole transmission. Hakdama to Perkei Avot, called Shmona Prakim. Okay, there the Rambam deals with ethics and the ethical man and the golden mean. Right? And Hakdama to Perichelik. Right, Perichelik is the last parak of Sanhedrin. It deals with also with Agadata. Here the Rambam talks about how do we understand Agadata? You know, how am I supposed to look at it? How foolish people, the majority, don't understand Agadata. It's here also that he talks about the afterlife and the soul and reincarnation. It's here that the whole 13 principles of faith that we know, the famous, it's written all here in Akdama to Mishnah. And all of these things were controversial. And yet, anyone who deals with any of these topics has to first deal with the Rambam. No one ignores the Rambam. You can disagree with the Rambam, but no one ignores the Rambam. Everything that he wrote on was dealt with. Now, while in Egypt, he hears about a false Messiah, a Jew converted to Islam. And now he was in Yemen, and he was trying to get all the Jews of Yemen to convert to Islam. And he's trying to show them it's predicted in the Torah. And the Rambam wrote a strong letter to the Jews of Yemen against Islam. And he said both Islam and Christianity, they try to be like Judaism, but it's like comparing a statue to a human being. You know, they look a little bit, it's not the same thing. He rips apart the proofs of the apostate, and he urges them not to despair of the coming of Mashiach. The Rambam even got himself an audience with the Sultan, Saladin, and he was able to convince him to lift the oppressive taxes that he had put on the Jews of Yemen. And he agreed. The Rambam became such a hero to the Jews of Yemen, not only did they pasquin by the Rambam, but they started to add his name at the Kaddish. Instead of saying, you know, they'd say, the Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, Mashiach should come in the time of the Rambam. Right? That's how important the Rambam was to them. Tragedy then strikes the Rambam. His brother David, who was a merchant, died. Now, David and they had like a Yisachar Zvulun relationship. David was a merchant, and he supported the Rambam, and he learned. And now, David died. And the Rambam took it so hard, he was so depressed, he didn't get out of bed for like a year. That's how depressed he was. We find it startling. But a whole year, the Rambam was like, it was so difficult, this tragedy. People offered him to be the chief rabbi of Cairo. He turns it down because his reading of the Mishnah and Perkei Avot that not to make the Torah to kardom lachbobor, right? Like a shovel to dig with. Like I shouldn't make money from teaching Torah. So he felt it was usser, and therefore he didn't do it. And it's at this point he becomes a doctor. He becomes a doctor to pay off his brother's debts and to now support two families, all the while serving as the head of Egyptian Jewry. In 1185, the year he's 50 years old, he becomes the chief physician for the Sultan. I saw in one book that Richard the Lionhearted had made him the same offer in England, which I find cool because the Rambam wrote Mor Nebuchim at this time, and he wrote in Arabic so people should understand. Who knows? Because in England, it might have been written like in Old English. It would be like reading Chaucer, we still need a dictionary. But, it might have been cool. Who knows? Anyway, one of his students writes him a letter that he'd love to visit. The Rambam says, that would be great, except I'd really have no time for you. And he tells him what his day is like. He says he gets up early in the morning, and he goes to the palace, and he has to attend to the king's many children, wives, concubines, and only in the afternoon he comes home, and he finds his house filled with Jews and non-Jews alike, line usually out the door and around the block, and he quickly goes into a room, eats a quick meal, the only meal of his day, and then treats these people till nightfall, sometimes 2 hours after nightfall, and then he collapses from fatigue and starts all over again. Shabbos, after Shacharis, he has personal audiences with members of his congregation to advise them on the upcoming week. Then he gives a shir until noon. And then after Mincha, he gives another shir until Maariv. And yet, with this schedule, he published the Morning of Uchim in the year 1190. Now, it began as answers to a student. Student asked him questions, started writing back. In the end, he decided to make it into a book. He tries to reconcile philosophy with Torah. And this becomes controversial on many levels. First of all, the accepted philosopher outlook was Aristotle. So whenever the Rambam could, he tried to show that Judaism is consistent with Aristotle's view. And he even says he understands how Aristotle mistakenly believed in the eternity of the universe. Okay? So this was already controversial. Number two. There's a Mishnah in Chagiga that says certain metaphysical ideas, Ma'aseh Merkava, you shouldn't even teach to people. It's like hint to them, and if they get it, so then that's good. So he tells us this in the introduction. Based on that, people now, he opened the Pandora's box, say, oh, Sir, I'm only hinting at what he means. So when he says he believes in creation, he probably doesn't, because he's only hinting at things. He didn't say what he means. So that also added to tons of controversy. It got so crazy that people said the Rambam doesn't believe in Tchiyas HaMesim, although it's one of his 13 principles of faith. But, you know, he doesn't really say what he means. So who knows? He was attacked not believing in Tchiyas HaMesim. So Rambam had to write a whole treatise, Ma'amar Tchiyas HaMesim, to explain his view on Tchiyas HaMesim, that of course he was in Tchiyas HaMesim. Till today, the Morning of Uchim is used by Jews and non-Jewish philosophers. And yet, with all that we just said, his most important book, and also controversial, is his Mishneh Torah. This was published earlier in the year 1180. Now, there's hundreds of commentaries on the Rambam. It's hard to find any chiddush of an achron that doesn't quote the appropriate Rambam in that sugya. No one ignores the Rambam. Everyone deals with the Rambam. Rambam's Mishneh Torah. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said, had to have been written by Ruach HaKodesh. Now, it began first as a Sefer HaMitzvot. 10 years earlier, the Rambam wrote Sefer HaMitzvot. Okay, this is against the Bahag, Baal Halachos, Gedolos. He had a Sefer HaMitzvot. The Rambam, he changed the order. The Rambam said, instead of going by the Parsha, go by importance. So he starts talking about belief in God. Even the first mitzvah is controversial. He says, the mitzvah to believe in God. The Rambam says, that's not a mitzvah, that's a prerequisite. How can I talk about command mitzvah? I don't believe in the commander. So the Ramban doesn't count that as one of the 613. The Rambam does. So you have the Sefer HaMitzvot, which then, working off that, he turns into the Mishneh Torah. He expands upon this. He takes all the Gemaras, Bavli Yerushalmi, all the Midrashei Halacha, the Sifrei Gaonim, and he organizes it into 14 volumes with subdivisions, totaling exactly 1,000 halachot. He wrote in Mishneiach Hebrew. Right, he had choices. Could have been biblical, could have been modern. Mishneiach Hebrew. Why? I think because he's a descendant of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who put together the Mishnah. He's basically doing the same thing 1,000 years later. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi organized and made the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. He now organized 1,000 years later, puts all the Gemaras and everything together, and he has now 14 volumes, but he puts together the Mishneh Torah. Now, he writes in his introduction, people didn't like this, all you need in your library is a Tanakh and my Sefer. Obviously, if you had written other Sfarim, you're not a fan. Okay? You don't need anything else. The Rambam was anti-pilpul. He felt that a lot of the stuff that people were doing, all this fanciful chakiras and this and that, it's not what it's about. Just know the halacha. I've got it clear for you. It's all you need. So one of my professors in graduate school said, in this regard, the Rambam is one of the biggest failures in all of Jewish history. Why? Because more pilpalistic Sfarim have been written on the Rambam than any other Sefer that we have. That what he came to put an end to, he actually generated a whole new genre of Sfarim. Why? Because the Rambam writes in his introduction, I took great care. Every word that I wrote is carefully chosen. Every place where I put it is carefully organized. So like the Rambam, for example, so with the Daraisa, moved to the Rabbanans. So something is seemingly out of order. I would have thought that would be first. How come chidushim? So, in this regard, you have all these pilpalistic sfarim that was written on the Rambam. Now, this sefer caused a tremendous controversy. Some of the reasons are just regular, and some are particular. So, first one. They disagree that it's a psak. All right, anytime someone's going to write a sefer on psak halacha, it's going to be people that say, he got it wrong. Okay. And the Rambam even writes in one of his shelot and tshuva, look, I'm a human being. It's possible that I made mistakes. Fine. Two, people, the Ravid is upset that he ignores lots of Gaonic literature. Now the truth is, so does Tosfos. But the Ravid was upset with that. Fine. Three, too much philosophy. If you ever opened up the Rambam, Yesodei Torah, the first four prakim, all those philosophical ideas. Very difficult. And that's why in yeshiva you start from Perek Hei, right? So it says, what's that all about? And then you throw in the Mor Nevuchim as well. Christian Europe is not exposed to philosophy. So they're saying, what is this? Why are we talking about this? Another thing, the Rambam doesn't write any arguments. You would read the Rambam and assume everyone agrees. It's authoritative. And we had no idea that there was actually machlokot. The Rush got upset and said the Rambam writes it as if he's a Navi. And the Rush even changed the name. He said, don't call it Mishneh Torah, call it Yad Chazakah. And we see it in most volumes, that's both. Yad, Yud Dalet, 14 volumes. Because what does Mishneh Torah mean? A summary of the Torah? Who are you that you're summarizing the whole Torah? So he was upset with that. Another problem, no sources. Rambam doesn't write any sources. So we know Kesef Mishnah, that's what he started doing. People are writing sources. The Rambam admits this was a mistake. And he writes one of his tshuvas. If I have time, I'll go back and write all the sources. Okay? Also, people were upset. They said, now you have the Mishnah Torah. Who's going to learn Gemara? It's going to bring to a decline of learning Shas. You have the easy way out. I'll just go look up the halacha. I have to go through the Shaka Vataria. Rambam tells me right now the Psak halacha. Another interesting thing for us today, because we're more rational, Rambam is the big rationalist. There's no non-rational halachot. Now, you would say, what's a non-rational halacha? Well, the Shulchan Aruch has a bunch. So, for example, in the Shulchan Aruch, you'll talk about, this is a good omen, this is a bad omen. Oh, it's good to get married in the first half of the month, when the moon, you know, is growing, not in the second half of the month. The superiority of using the right hand versus the left hand. We turn to the right, not to the left. Right shoe, left shoe. That's not in the Rambam. Why would that be in the Rambam? That's not a halacha. Which position your bed should be in the bedroom? Which direction? North? It's not in the Rambam. Ayin Hara? That's not in the Rambam. Mazalot? That's not in the Rambam. Because of all of this, leading opponent said, don't call it Mishnah Torah, call it Mishanah Torah. He's changing the Torah. That's how upset people got. Now, the Rambam himself predicted the book might be controversial, but listen to this reason. Because either lack of understanding or jealousy. Okay. And he said it'll take time to determine if it is a good book. Now, the controversy actually reaches its peak after his death. And in fact, this is very sad, Jews burnt the Rambam's sarm. Jews burnt the Rambam's sarm. Jews are Kanaim, right? Jews are extremists. And if you think you're fighting a holy war, there's nothing that's going to stop you. They burnt the Rambam's firm. You know who was involved in burning the Rambam's firm? Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah, according to legend, he wrote the Shari Tshuva as a kapara for having been involved. And he claimed that when years later they burnt the Talmud in Paris, the Goyim did, says, why did it happen? Because we first burnt the Rambam. That's why Kadosh Baruch Hu allowed this to happen. Very, very severe. The controversy dies down, but it doesn't subside totally. And proof is, every edition of the Rambam is published with the scathing comments of the Ravid right next to it. Disagreements between them include views on philosophy as part of Judaism. The Rambam gives Tamei HaMitzvot. The Ravid says, who needs Tamei HaMitzvot? I do it because God said so. Mashiach. The Rambam says, no need for miracles. Just look at Bar Kochba. Rabbi Kiva thought he was Mashiach. The Ravid's response, that's why he was rejected and killed. Of course you need miracles. The Rambam says, those psukim about the wolf flying with the lamb, allegory, says the Ravid. Obviously it's literal. Okay, the Ravid was such a literalist that even things the Gemara turns into allegory. Anyone ever learn Makos? Yes. Right, when it talks about a Baba Machteret. But it says in the pasuk, "Vezarach Hashemesh." What does the Gemara say? It says, clear to you as the sun that the thief wouldn't kill. Like what case? Father breaking into his son's home, right? Says, what? It's also Psachim? Okay. Okay. It's in Sanhedrin. Right. So, what does the Ravid say? Zarach HaShemesh means it's daylight. The thief doesn't expect anyone home. He assumes you're at work. So he didn't bring a weapon to defend himself. He wouldn't kill you. At night, he knows you're home. He brought his weapon. So he's very literal. The Rambam is anti-most minhagim because he felt most of them came from alien societies. And they were not rational. Plus, I mean, he had a little bit of elitist attitude towards the masses. So he basically said, stupid minhagim. If it was a minhag nevi'im, a minhag chachamim, seder. But otherwise, Rambam was not into it. The Ravid, what are you talking about? Am Yisraelim lo nevi'im heim? B'nei nevi'im heim. Every minhag that Am Yisrael does, there's some very good reason for. And the Rambam limits, the minhagim. Just like it's hard to find a page of Gemara that doesn't have Tosfos attacking Rashi on the other side, so too you can't find a Rambam without the Hasagas Ravid. And the reason is this: we have to understand Judaism encourages critical analysis. We don't tell you accept it because I said so. There should be a comparison of opinions. This is very important. On the 20th of Teva, 1204, one of the greatest and most controversial Jews of all time passed away. There was a 3-day mourning period for the Rambam in Fostat, Egypt, his community. He was buried in Tveria, next to his father. Now if you go to Tveria, one of my friends, he was involved in putting, there's like a whole Rambam museum there. Okay, Rabbi Yamin Levi, he was helped putting it together. On his tombstone, it says, anyone know what it says on the Rambam's tombstone? Mimosha ad Moshe, lokam ke Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu until the Rambam, there's no one like the Rambam. Wow.
Is he buried next to
He's buried next to Tveria.
He went there, he died in Egypt?
Yeah.